Tonight was a 3-hour block of AEW programming. 3 hours. Dynamite and Collision. The go-home show to Full Gear, which is coming up from Newark this coming Saturday. And, you know, last week, we had 2 Blood and Guts matches. Last week, we had a lot of blood spilled. Last week, we saw crazy shit. We saw people thrown through flaming tables. We saw people going into broken glass. And we saw thumbtacks. And we saw barbed wire. We saw all kinds of crazy stuff. But you would almost never even know that that happened a week ago. Because the only person who really was held off the show and was, you know, referred to almost like in the past tense and was not there because he supposedly suffered second-degree burns, which may well be legit if you watched the show last week, was Darby Allin. Most everybody else was on the show. They were wrestling in many cases. And again, it's as if what we saw last week didn't matter or didn't even happen, which I thought was very, very weird. Considering how much blood was spilled on that show last week. But Blood and Guts is in the rear view. We got Full Gear coming up. We added a few more matches to the card tonight. Of course we did. So I will have a full rundown of what the card is going to be this weekend. We'll go through my very quick predictions later on at the end. But tonight we had the return of Kenny Omega. He wasn't on the show for very long. He didn't do too much. But we haven't seen him in a little bit. So he was back on the show tonight. We had Mercedes Moné in the main event of Collision, the Boston girl. They were in Boston tonight, so they saved her for the very end of the show. She was wrestling Red Velvet, who we have not seen in the ring since June, in a basically kind of a unification match or whatever you want to call it, because we had the Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion against the interim Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion, as if anybody gives a shit about the interim or even frankly non-interim Ring of Honor Television Championship. I certainly don't. That was the main event though on Collision. I'll give you one guess as to who went over in that match. It's all about pushing Mercedes and Statlander, which is coming up on Saturday for the only championship that really matters, which is the AEW Women's World Championship. So that was in the main event at the end of the show. And it was a journey to get there. From start to finish, this was a long show. One of the many reasons I hate 3 hours. I don't care what the promotion is. I fucking hate it. But because Full Gear is coming up on Saturday, you can't have Collision on Saturday. I guess instead of doing it on Thursday, they decided to do a 3-hour block. So that is what we ended up with. We also had a couple of women's tag team title tournament matches on this show. I was curious coming into this. What are they going to do at Full Gear? Because there's a lot of women who are missing. And there really isn't enough time to set up the finals for that show. We got our answer tonight. We are going to have all of the women who are in the semifinal round of the tag team title tournament. All of those teams are going to be in a match on Saturday that has been added with a very interesting stipulation that is completely and utterly unnecessary. But since we're adding stipulations to everything on this show, I guess Tony Khan figured we need a stipulation for this too. We'll get into that. We also found out that the Continental Classic is officially starting on the show next week, which usually it does, coming out of Full Gear. And that will take us to, I assume, World's End. So Continental Classic time is almost here. That's what we're going to talk about here. And I'm going to try to get you out of here as quickly as I can because I was not a fan of this show tonight. I was pretty bored by a lot of this show tonight. This was not one of the stronger go-home shows that they have had. I cannot tell you that this show tonight made me any more excited to watch this pay-per-view on Saturday. If I told you that, I would be lying to you. But we're going to talk about Dynamite. We're going to talk about Collision. We are live here on YouTube. It is a Wednesday night. It is November 19th, 2025. I am the Sala Monster. Celebrating 18 years of the Sound Off all November long. Super chats are open. I saw that our boy Joseph did a little hit and run earlier. So we'll be getting to his and all of your questions as well later on here in the stream. And if you missed any of the other content this week, big Raw recap show on Monday night coming out of that Madison Square Garden show. Sound Off this past weekend, episode 938. Please go back and check that out. What are you waiting for? That'll be there waiting for you when we are done here. And also be aware, no SmackDown review on Friday night. They opened the show with Bobby Lashley. Man, this feels like 84 years ago. Bobby Lashley against Ricochet, with the winner of this entering the Casino Gauntlet at Full Gear in the number one spot. Because in the Casino Gauntlet, of course, it could end at any moment. So you want to be in that match as early as possible, or else you may not be able to make it out to the ring. So whereas in the Royal Rumble, you would not want to be number one. In a match like this, you want to be the first person out there, or the second person out there. Number one and number two are effectively the same thing. But that national championship will be decided in the Casino Gauntlet, this new title that they are adding. Two new championships. The women's tag team titles have not yet been decided, but we're also going to have, you know what the crazy thing is? Now that I think about it, we're going to have a new national champion before we even have women's tag team champions. That to me is just fucking ridiculous. Excalibur reminded all of us that the Full Gear Countdown special, by the way, would air tonight after Collision. Fuck you. Yeah. Not sticking around for that, but if you want 4 hours of AEW, enjoy. So once Bobby Lashley and Ricochet were in the ring, Ricochet took the microphone. I think they had already rang the bell. And he took the microphone and he says that, you know, healing on the Boston crowd, bringing up the Philadelphia Eagles, mentioned fly, Eagles fly. He says he knows that Patriots fans don't remember what it's like to win a Super Bowl. The only good thing to come out of Massachusetts is his wife. He said that he was surprised Ariel Helwani did not ask Tony Khan about MVP having dementia, since he called the national title the international title last week. He called Lashley a bald idiot. He kept rambling, and Lashley finally chokeslammed him out of the ring onto the Gates of Agony. And then Lashley was about to steamroll all of them, which he did, including launching Toa Leona over the guardrail by the timekeeper's area. I don't know if he landed on the table that was there or the floor, but he went right over that guardrail. Ricochet sidestepped a corner charge back inside. He got a schoolboy for a two count, and then he fired off a whole host of kicks and a running shooting star moonsault combo. Ricochet rolled through a top rope shooting star press attempt, and then he pulled Bryce Remsburg in front of him, which allowed him to rake the eyes. Loaded up for the spirit gun, and Ricochet charged. Lashley caught him, though, into a big spine buster and a spear. And thanks for coming, Ricochet. That's all she wrote. And just like that, Bobby Lashley wins, and he will be number one in the Casino Gauntlet. You know, Ricochet's promo at the beginning of this match was longer than the match itself. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's certainly not a good thing. But Lashley is number one in the gauntlet. It does not make it. I know in theory it makes it more likely he might win. It actually, in sort of, think about it, put your wrestling thinking cap on here. It makes it less likely because it's a little too obvious. If Bobby Lashley is coming out there at number one, oh man, he's got the advantage in this match. Sure he does. So we know one person who's not winning the gauntlet on Saturday. And Ricochet also, like, you would think maybe they're setting up Ricochet for a win. Man, he got fucking squashed basically here in this match. I don't think so. I think they could potentially be setting this up for someone that people aren't thinking about. I don't think that just because Ricochet doesn't really have a whole lot to do and because of the way he lost here, that necessarily means he's going to win the championship. But you know what? Even if he did, like, how sad is that? You're going to introduce this new championship. Look at the way that they booked Ricochet on this show. I'm not even saying that it didn't make sense that Bobby Lashley would wreck this guy. But, like, he's treated like a total jabron. Now, you turn around on Saturday and you put this championship on him. What does that say for the national title? Like, it literally just becomes something to give to someone who does not have anything going on. So here, we will give you a belt. If you're going to introduce a new championship, at least put it on somebody that you're actually planning on pushing. I got a different idea about this. Talk about that when we do the predictions later. Samoa Joe was backstage with Katsuyori Shibata. Said that it must feel good for Hangman Adam Page to be a fighting world champion. Joe said that he was told if he interferes tonight in Hangman's match, he will lose his AEW world title match on Saturday. Joe said Page's whole world of joy and happiness is about to get very different very quickly. Says Hangman is guilty of crimes and transgressions against the ops, and it will be at the hands of Shibata. Deadly by design, violent by intention. Tonight, Shibata begins Page's payment, and at full gear, Joe said he will fully collect. Backstage, we saw the Young Bucks watching video of their match from Full Gear back in 2020. Ah, the old days. Remember when we used to gather here on the channel back in the pandemic days at Daly's Place? I don't really reminisce about the pandemic days too much because I really just don't want to think about those days. But those were the early days of the Dynamite reviews and the AEW pay-per-view reviews. And it's very interesting to go back and think about the product then as compared to the product now as we sit here 5 years later. It is very interesting. So they're watching back footage of that match where they teamed with Kenny Omega. Renee Paquette walks in. She asks the Bucks if they would join the Don Callis family. Are you going to join the Don Callis family? And before they could answer, Callis showed up. He told the Bucks to go show the world why you are the best tag team on the planet, because their match was coming up next. And then after, you guys can give all the rubes out there your answer as far as joining the family. He gave them another grandiose introduction on their way out to the ring, shitload of pyro. The Bucks did not look overly enthusiastic about any of this. But it was the Bucks and Josh Alexander against Skyflight. Many of you may be asking, what? What's that? It's a team. It's a trio. It's Scorpio Sky and Top Flight, hence Skyflight. Now, I won't fault you if you have no idea what I'm talking about, because the last time that we even saw Top Flight wrestling here on Dynamite was back in May. And even worse, Scorpio Sky. Do you know the last time that Scorpio Sky wrestled on this program? You would have to go all the way back to July 6th of 2022 when he lost the TNT Championship to Wardlow. Now, you want to talk about feeling like a lifetime ago. That's a lifetime ago. But here they are, just like that. They're back on Dynamite. They're going to take on the Young Bucks and the Callis family here. So the Bucks were setting up for a double team move on Scorpio when Alexander tagged himself into the match. Bucks were not pleased about this. Darius Martin tagged in. He hit a standing Spanish fly and a DDT on Alexander, which led to a near fall. The Bucks started a super kick party. They set up Dante for a BTE trigger, but he pulled the Bucks' arms to make them collide into one another. The Bucks came back with a Meltzer driver on Dante. Alexander then shoved the Bucks out of the way so that he could apply an ankle lock, and he got the submission win for his team. Now, after the match was over, Don Callis gets into the ring. And also, here comes Hechicero. Here comes Mark Davis. Here comes Rocky Romero. Said, now you guys can announce that you are going to join the Don Callis family. The Bucks were reluctant. Callis reminded them that, you know, the money's been flowing now that Callis has been looking out for them in recent weeks, and he demanded that they announce that they were joining the Callis family. So he started getting agitated. He said, you know, AEW can be a very dangerous place. Oh, yes, I know AEW can be a very dangerous place. I watched the show last week. A little too dangerous. But he said AEW can be a very dangerous place, and the Bucks walking around without a family, well, that could result in something bad happening. Callis would hate to see what happened to Kenny Omega happen to the Bucks. So what they were going to do, though, as far as the Bucks, we'll never know. As far as their decision here, because they were interrupted by Kenny Omega's music. And Omega made his way out. He had a chair in hand. He took out Rocky Romero and Mark Davis with it in the aisle before getting in the ring, and he tackled Josh Alexander. The Bucks pulled Omega off, and you know, he shoved them, and that little distraction was enough for Alexander to pick the ankle to get the ankle lock. Callis ordered Alexander to let him go. Said, you know what? The Bucks don't have to announce if they're going to join the family. All they need to do is take Kenny Omega and deliver a BTE trigger to him right here in the middle of the ring right now. The Bucks slowly look like they're about to do it when out come Jack Perry and Luchasaurus, and they clear the ring. Jack Perry had a shovel. Luchasaurus, and I shit you not, he had a vacuum cleaner, which was just a ridiculous visual. I suppose he just grabbed the first thing he saw. Now, why there was a vacuum cleaner sitting there, I have no idea. But he had a vacuum cleaner with him. And Jack Perry, by the way, with that shovel and the vest and whatever he was wearing, he looked like a fucking park ranger. So outside the ring with the rest of the family, as they bailed, or they were in the middle of bailing, you could see the Young Bucks, they look very conflicted over this whole situation. So they were really leaning very heavily into making you believe that we are going to get a reunion of the Elite. And it makes me change my opinion of what I thought we were going to get on Saturday, because I do think all signs point to Omega and the Bucks getting back together. Now, I can't discount the possibility they're setting up some big swerve, you know, at Full Gear, but it looks like, because, I mean, if you think about it, they've been doing the Buck, like the Broke Buck stuff for a while where they're out of money, and it was very entertaining for a while. That could only go on for so long. It's a $1 million match, like as ridiculous as that sounds. And it really, the money stuff at this point is just comically stupid. But it's $1 million on the line in this match. And let's say the heels win and the Bucks, right, they get back and out of the red and into the green or the black, whatever it is. And so now they have money again to spend. Like, when does this end? Like, do they just go and spend it again? And you get a lot of the same vignettes we had, you know, over the last few months. Like, what's the end game for this? If not them turning back babyface and kind of rejoining the Elite and getting the band back together. I don't know if Hangman might end up getting involved. That would feel like probably the end game of this. They've been heels now for a while. So I think that's where we're headed. I think that's probably the likely outcome of what we are going to see at Full Gear. Or at least the next step that will ultimately lead to that. Now after this, they cut to the announce desk. And they had Tony Schiavone talk about the passing this past week of legendary announcer Bob Caudle, who he worked with many, many years ago. I think he and Bob Caudle first worked together back in the mid-80s, he said. And just passed away at the age of 95. Schiavone says he was the voice of his childhood. And if there was a wrestling hall of fame for announcers, said Bob would be the first name inducted. And they put the rest in peace graphic up on the screen. That took us into a commercial break. Good on them for acknowledging Caudle here on the show. WWE didn't say a word about him on Monday night. So it was nice to see AEW acknowledge him here. Now, with Bobby Lashley having secured the number one spot in the Casino Gauntlet this weekend, his Hurt Syndicate partner, Shelton Benjamin, had a match on this show to decide the number two spot in the Gauntlet. And his opponent here was Speedball Mike Bailey. This was a good one with these two up until the finish. MVP sat in on commentary, and at one point in the middle of the match, he stood up, and he was very frustrated with Benjamin kind of taking his time and kind of toying with Bailey. So he stood up and he started yelling at Shelton, telling him, stop playing with your food and end this. Bailey hit a standing shooting star press. MVP yelled that you don't win matches by flying through the air. Benjamin got an armbar applied, but Benjamin powered him up for a slam. Or I should say Bailey got the armbar, Benjamin powered him up. Bailey, though, held on, and both men ended up tumbling out over the top rope together out to the floor. Back in the ring, Bailey applied another armbar that Benjamin escaped. When they stood up, Benjamin superkicked Bailey, and what a superkick this was. Holy shit, the sound that this thing made and the reaction from the crowd, like that should have been and maybe was supposed to be the finish of this match, because I mean, the super kick is just such an abused move. We see multiple ones in every match, right? Especially on this show. We just have the Young Bucks out there. And so, whether it's the Young Bucks or the Usos, like there's a lot of different people that have incorporated super kicks into their act. But this super kick, this resonated. This was like a gunshot going off. And he covers Speedball. And there's no doubt that his shoulders were down. Just the camera angle that we had, it was very visible, his shoulders. And Bayley's shoulders were flat on the mat. He didn't lift them up. He didn't accidentally get them up or attempt to lift them up. Paul Turner, though, counts one, he counts two, and then he holds up. And he's sticking his hand under the shoulder as if to like, oh, well, his shoulder was up. I'm like, no, no, it wasn't, motherfucker. I'm watching the show. I have a great view. The shoulder was not up. So something went wrong here. I don't know if Bayley just forgot to get his shoulder up if he was supposed to. I don't know if he legitimately got his bell rung and for a few seconds didn't know where he was. It could have been as simple as the referee fucked up. You know, and Paul Turner held up when he wasn't supposed to. MVP jumped off commentary and got into the ring thinking the match was over. And Paul Turner was like, no, 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 it's just the two. And MVP, you know, got right back out of the ring. So Benjamin got up. He hit a German suplex. He hit the running step-up knee in the corner. And then he hit one more super kick. And then he won the match. So there's not a doubt in my mind that was supposed to be the finish. I mean, they just basically, they added a couple of moves and did another super kick. You know, to make up for the botch. So it's unfortunate that that happened because the two of them were having a pretty good match. Outside of that, you know, little botch there at the end, I thought it was a fun match. Probably my favorite one on the show. I think the announcers also did not make a big enough deal about the fact that Lashley and Benjamin are now starting this gauntlet on Saturday. So the question is now, are they going to go at it? Are they going to just stand around and wait for number three to come out and just work together? Or are they going to pull an axe and smash at the beginning of the Royal Rumble in 89 and be like, all right, bro, it's every man for himself, and just beat the holy hell out of each other? I don't know. I just feel like the announcers didn't really dwell on that as much as they should have. We had John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli against Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong. Strong set up Claudio for a suplex. Moxley clipped the back of Strong's leg. Cassidy checked in, and he sent Claudio to the floor. Cassidy went for a dive. Claudio, though, caught him and pressed him over his head, and he walked him over towards the barricade, and he just dropped him down face first right on the top part of the barricade. After a break, Claudio got a giant swing on Cassidy, but he let him go after only two revolutions, which got boos from the crowd. Bryan Danielson on commentary wondered if maybe Claudio's back was bothering him after Blood and Guts. Bryan, evidently nothing was bothering anybody after Blood and Guts. Everybody looked A-OK. Guess not. Everybody was tip-top. So a little while later, Daniel Garcia caused a distraction that allowed Moxley to hit Roddy with a paradigm shift. Moxley had the pin. Cassidy broke it up. Moxley got crotched on the top turnbuckle. Strong superplexed him and then tagged out. Garcia caused another distraction. Cassidy, though, fought off Moxley and hit him with an orange punch. Wheeler Yuta then hopped the barricade, and Cassidy spotted him and chased him around and back into the ring. While the referee was busy getting Yuta out of the ring, Claudio hit Cassidy with a pop-up uppercut. Moxley then took advantage. He applied the bulldog choke, and the referee almost immediately called for the bell. Like, it was very, very fast. There was no struggle. There was, and the story, I guess, is that Claudio knocked him out, you know, or knocked him silly on the uppercut, and then Moxley just sort of picked the bones, took advantage, and got the quick win. And when the match was over, the beatdown continued on Cassidy until Kyle O'Reilly ran down to the ring, quickly got an ankle lock on Moxley, who frantically tapped out. Yuta put the boots to Kyle, but he would not break the hold. He kept holding on to it, and the referees couldn't get him off. They were, you know, pleading with him to let go of the hold as Strong and Orange Cassidy were holding off Daniel Garcia and Yuta and Claudio. So finally, they managed to pull Moxley out of the ring to safety. Kyle took the microphone, and he said, because Moxley gave him a taste for blood last week, he demanded a no-holds-barred match at Full Gear. And just like in Blood and Guts, he said, the history books will say that Moxley tapped out. Kyle came out here, man, and even in this promo, he was acting like a raving lunatic. He looked like a maniac out there. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. Guys, if you're suffering from hair loss, you've probably tried something, or maybe multiple things, to find that magic potion to get your hair back. And if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, that's me, then this is for you. So listen up. You can forget all the trial and error, all the searching, like you're looking for buried treasure. What works for hair loss has been staring you right in the face this entire time. With Hims, you get access to clear solutions, expert guidance, and an online process that takes the confusion out of care. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. No hidden fees, no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your own schedule. You can think of Hims as your digital front door that you walk through to be transported back to your old self. With 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns, all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your free online visit. hims.com/solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. Let me just point out something to you. Now, we just had two blood and guts matches last week, right? Where they gave you as much blood and violence as they could possibly muster, right? With the men, with the women. And in between that, we had a Hangman Page, Powerhouse Hobbs, Falls Count Anywhere match with more craziness. That was the entire show last week. It was just insanity. And on the show last week, they announced that the main event of Full Gear is going to be a steel cage match, coming off a show where we had two blood and guts matches in the cage last week. So that was silly enough to follow up on that with another regular cage match. We also already have scheduled on this pay-per-view in a few days, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe for the TNT title in a no disqualification match. So now we have added Kyle O'Reilly, the other Kyle, against Jon Moxley in a no holds barred match, which is the same fucking thing. We already have a no DQ match on the, forget the cage. We have a no DQ match on that show. Why do we need a no holds barred match? Why? On the same show? I don't understand. I understand doing Kyle and Moxley because they've had, you know, a little feud going on here for about a month now. They had a couple of matches together. Kyle got the big submission win in Blood and Guts last week. So now they're going to go at it one more time. That's fine. But I'm like, we already have a no DQ match for the TNT Championship on this show. No DQ and no holds barred is the same thing. It's redundant. It's not needed. But here's the other thing about Jon Moxley. We saw him surrender in Blood and Guts, right? He lost it for the Death Riders last week. So the first thing that he does on Saturday, on Collision, the opening match is the Death Riders, and he's on commentary, and he's brushing off the loss. I just want to preach positivity. And all the members of the Death Riders, they seem to have no issue with Jon Moxley. They're not even giving him the side eye. Like I said, when we watched the show tonight and no one was showing any real signs of wear or tear, except Chris Statlander on her back from the bed of nails that she landed in. It's as if it never happened. Moxley lost last week, and it's just on to the next. It's like nothing even happened. So now we know Moxley is going to be wrestling Kyle O'Reilly on the pay-per-view. and Kyle O'Reilly should win that match. Plain and simple. Kyle O'Reilly got a major win, the biggest win of his career in this company, at the end of Blood and Guts last week. To do what? To send him to Full Gear to just lose to Moxley and give us some 50-50 bullshit? You really want to take advantage of a win and give Kyle that much more credibility. And I'm not sure this is really about building up Kyle O'Reilly to be a credible challenger for any particular title. This likely has more to do with Moxley and the Death Riders and wherever this is going than anything to really help Kyle. But why not? That was a major win last week. Why not follow up on that with another win, right? And really send a message like last week was no fluke. Plus, it just feeds that much better into the Death Rider story where Moxley would lose again. That's why I'm changing my prediction for the Pac match. Pac has a match on that show against Darby Allin. I had Darby winning. In light of this match being added to the card, I think it would make more sense to have Moxley submit again and then have Pac win his match against Darby to show that the other members of the Death Riders, they're picking up the slack here, right? They're doing what they're supposed to do. Moxley has become the weak link. Moxley's the one who keeps losing. Moxley loses, Pac wins. To me, in my mind, for the story that hopefully they're telling, that would make more sense. Maybe they're not telling that story, and Moxley just goes back to his winning ways, in which case I'm not fucking sure what we're doing here. So that's been added to the show. In the first of two women's tag team matches, still in the opening round, by the way, we had Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa against Alex Windsor and Riho. We got new music and matching gear. Like, they have their own custom entrance now, do Toni and Mina. So if you were doubting who's winning the championships here in this tournament, I mean, that, come on, that's got to be a sign. They're the only ones, I think, in this tournament that really got their own custom tag team entrance. So Riho tagged in after a little bit. She was used as a projectile as an assisted Hurricane Rana sent Toni to the corner. Riho tried a head scissors on her but got flattened, allowing Mina to tag in and hit a twisting tornado for two. It was a blind tag from Windsor, who hit a stun gun on Mina as Toni tried to make the save but took a double suplex for her troubles. Riho scaled the ropes, took out the love bombs, that's what they call themselves, took them out with a crossbody on the floor. Later on, Windsor dropped Storm outside with a cannonball off the apron. Riho missed a double stomp back inside, allowing Mina to hit a spinning back fist, and then she sank in the figure four leg lock. Storm and Windsor, they took turns turning a submission into, or turning the submission hold in their partner's favor until firing off dueling headbutts, and they collapsed on top of Mina. And Riho breaking the submission. Storm and Windsor, they tagged back in legally. Windsor hit a lariat, attempted a sharpshooter. Storm, though, escaped. Toni and Mina followed with stereo sweet cheek music as Toni spiked Alex with Storm Zero for the win to advance to the next round of the tournament. I couldn't get into this. I'm not even saying it was a bad match. I couldn't get into this. Technically, it was fine. But again, it's a foregone conclusion who was going over here just based on what they did at the end of Blood and Guts last week. All right, we already knew before the bell rang, we knew who was moving on to the next round. After the match, they threw it to Renee, or I should say the voice of Renee. We didn't actually see her, but we heard her voice. And she had some breaking news. She said the four teams that are in the tournament that have advanced to the semifinal round will all compete in a four corners match this Saturday at Full Gear, and the winning team will get to choose the stipulation for their respective semifinal tournament match whenever that takes place. They didn't say when that would be, I'm sure on television next week. So basically, they're just going to have a four-way on the pay-per-view to get these women on the show, and whichever team wins, they get to pick a stipulation for their next match in the next round. We get enough stipulations in this company, even on this show on Saturday. I don't like having stipulations in this tournament. It's completely unnecessary. We don't need stipulations in the actual tournament. You want to have a four-way match just for the hell of it and just getting them on the show? I mean, that's fine. maybe there's some other advantage, you know, that you can provide the winning team. I don't know, but I'm not a fan of adding stipulations to this tournament. I mean, it's gone stipulation crazy here. It's not needed. Alicia Atout was backstage with Kyle Fletcher, Don Callis, and Mark Briscoe. And the two men have agreed to no physicality here in this segment. And they were asked, why such high stakes for their pay-per-view match? Yes, that was the question. Fletcher said that this way there's a clear winner and a clear loser. No excuses. Briscoe will thank them for joining the family because, again, the stipulation is that if Mark Briscoe loses this match, he must join the Don Callis family because we don't have enough members. I don't know how they can field the team. They don't have enough. They need more. Mark Briscoe will join. We have the Young Bucks. They're teasing that they might join the Don Callis family. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to make any pronouncements here, but I might join the Don Callis family. We got to get some more guys. So the stakes have been set for their TNT title match on Saturday. Briscoe said, don't talk to me about family. Every time I step inside that ring, I fight for my family, which is true. I mean, the guy's got like 12 kids. Actually, I think it's 9. But he says he fights for his family and his road family, the conglomeration, who he won blood and guts with last week. Failure is not an option. Briscoe won't be letting his family down. He'll be making them proud. And so, all of a sudden, Kazuchika Okada and Hechicero, they attack Briscoe from behind. They held him as Don Callis walked into the shot, and he said he's going to make Briscoe's kids orphans. And Fletcher thanked Okada for not agreeing to no physicality. Fletcher agreed. He never said anything about Okada, though. And Okada said he's glad he could help, whereas Takeshita couldn't. He's such a petty bitch. I love it. We got a packed video promo on Darby Allin saying Darby deserved an apology as he promised that he would break Darby's neck. And instead, he sent his charred corpse to the hospital. No one has heard from Darby since Blood and Guts, and it's because he's scared. Maybe Pac took things too far, but if Darby, the boy who never quits, has a backbone, he'll face him in a wrestling match at Full Gear. No weapons, no funny games, no bells or whistles. Without those, there's no way someone like Darby can compete with a legitimate athlete like him. And I know I said before I'm changing my prediction. It still feels like, you know, it's probably going to be a Darby win, but I just feel like it works better for the story if Pac wins and Moxley loses. Now watch them do the opposite. They close the Dynamite portion of tonight's 3 hours with Hangman Adam Page against Katsuyori Shibata with Samoa Joe at ringside on commentary. If Joe gets involved in this match, he will forfeit his championship match at Full Gear. Joe came over to the announce desk to put his headset on, and he told Tony Schiavone, or he called him the slippery little piggy, told him, you stay right there. Then he politely said hello to Excalibur and his old friend, hey, Brian Danielson, who asked, are you going to hurt my friend, Tony? And Joe said, no, I'm not out here for violence. Hangman rushed Shibata from the crowd. Shibata was coming out, and Hangman came out of the crowd and just jumped him, and Joe was incensed. Page launched Shibata over the timekeeper's table next to Joe, and then he slammed Shibata's head on the announce desk. Hangman turned his attention to Joe just long enough for Shibata to hit a running boot on the apron, slammed Hangman against the barricade repeatedly before setting him up on a chair. Page exploded out and dropped Shibata as Joe is now at this point losing his mind on commentary. Back inside the ring, Shibata targeted the taped up neck. I think he had some of that kinesio tape, did Hangman on his neck. Danielson asked Joe if he's amped up here tonight due to losing to Hangman last month. Joe said, no, it's due to stupid questions that I'm being asked. Actually, I'll bet that Joe is amped up for a very different reason. I think Joe is amped up because Twisted Metal was just renewed for a third season on Peacock. I'll bet that has him pretty amped up. Later on, Shibata countered out of a deadeye and then hit Shattered Dreams in the corner. Page rolled through a German. Shibata sent him into Paul Turner. giving Shibata a chance to hit a low blow, and he sank in a cross arm breaker. Joe said the low blow was a legal grappling move. Shibata went to the ankle lock, but Paige rolled through, which left Shibata holding Paige's boot, the WrestleMania 20 finish, where Kurt Angle pulled off Eddie Guerrero's boot. So now he's got Hangman's cowboy boot in his hand, and Paige fired off a lariat. The boot went flying straight up into the air. Hangman looks up, he catches the boot on the way down, and he puts the boot back on his foot, goes out to the apron, and vaults himself back in with a buckshot lariat. And he gets the win over Shibata. So the story here is that he took out Powerhouse Hobbs last week, because Hobbs was not on the show this week. He was in the hospital. So he took out Hobbs last week. Tonight it was Shibata. And now Saturday he gets Joe all alone inside the cage, where we know nobody can ever get in or out of these cages. I think Tony Schiavone made some dumb shit comment during the match here to that effect, where it was like, oh, Joe's going to be trapped in the cage with nowhere to go. He had the audacity to say this after people were just freely entering and exiting the cage at will last week during Blood and Guts. He had the audacity to make a comment like that. So that's the story going into this main event. And I thought Joe was great on commentary here. Just there's no one who sells intensity better than Samoa Joe. His facial expressions, his just, you know, the raging on commentary, knowing that he just had to control himself, because if he lifted a finger to get involved in this match, he was going to lose his championship match on Saturday. So he was great. And the best part of this, that and the finish, I like the boot flying up into the air and Hangman catching it. That was a nice touch. So Dynamite officially ended and Collision begins as Paige hits a low blow receipt on Shibata before staring down Joe. And he cuts a promo on Samoa Joe. Tell Samoa Joe, look around. Although Joe might be surrounded by thousands of crazy-ass fans, who actually were not that crazy. They were actually kind of dead for large swaths of the show here, especially in the third hour. Although I can't blame them. It's kind of a dead zone tonight. But he might be surrounded by thousands of crazy-ass fans, but he's now alone. Said that when Joe walks into the steel cage at full gear, Paige wants him to remember that Joe doesn't have Hobbs and he doesn't have Shibata with him. Says that he wants Joe to remember what Hangman did the last time he was locked in a cage with another man, which of course was Swerve Strickland last year at All Out. It would have been nice after the fact for the announcers to mention that. I guess they just assumed that they have their audience and they have no new fans. Which may well be true. You know, if Tony Khan does one thing very well, he certainly focuses on his diehards and his niche audience. But it would have been nice for the announcers to say something about who he was actually referring to or what match he was referring to. Like, we know because we saw that match and I saw someone stick a needle in another man's cheek, which I did not need to see. So anyway, that was the message that he sent to Samoa Joe there. Hangman swears he would have no problem doing it again. Something about what they did here was just very weird to me. So we already saw Hangman beat Joe clean, right, in their first match of WrestleDream. Hangman won. Now we're heading into the rematch, and Hobbs has been taken out. Shibata has been, I mean, he didn't really injure him, but I mean, Shibata now has been neutralized. And the story is that Joe is going into this match all alone. He's going into this match, the challenger is, as the underdog, after having already lost the first match. So under any other circumstances, you would think that they're setting up for Joe to win the championship. But I cannot imagine that Joe is winning the championship on Saturday. So it's like they've done all of these things to put Joe at a severe disadvantage, only for him to go in there and very likely lose. It's strange. It's just very weird. The Collision portion of the night opened with Anna Jay and Ty Mello against Megan Bain and Marina Shafir. This was I believe the final opening round match here in the women's tag team title tournament. This was not, this did not have the most scintillating start. Pretty dull stuff. Anna got worked over the entire commercial break. Things come back. Mello makes the tag. That lasted all of 20 seconds before she tagged Anna back into the match. Bayne and Shafir, they got spiked with double DDTs. Double guillotines were applied. Bayne and Shafir, they easily powered out. Shafir was sent outside. Megan got flattened with a flatliner and a rolling neck breaker. Bayne fought off a gory bomb, but Jay managed the Queen Slayer. Only Megan fell back into her own corner. So Marina was able to make the tag. She got a quick takedown into her mother's milk finish. What a name, by the way. What a name for a finish. Mother's milk. Anyway, that got her the win. So Megan Bayne and Marina Shafir are moving on to the next round. Love the Lord says MJF comes back and costs Hangman the title. Oh, MJF, I believe, is going to be back on Saturday. I just don't see him factoring into the match where he costs Hangman the belt, but that is an interesting theory. If everybody is thinking along the same lines, that there's no way Joe's going to win the title, and then he wins the championship. The problem with that is that he's losing the championship to do what exactly? To just drop it back to Hangman before World's End? World's End has got to be Hangman and MJF. I just cannot imagine that it's not Hangman MJF at World's End. Do they turn it into a triple threat? It would be interesting because it was at World's End when MJF lost that title 2 years ago, and he lost it to Samoa Joe. So now Joe is back in the mix here. But to do Joe and MJF makes no sense if you leave Hangman out of it. So, I mean, what are you looking at there? Are we looking at a triple threat? I'm not saying it's impossible. I can see it. I can see the ultimate degradation here being MJF, you know, costing Hangman his championship and laughing in his face. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something to it. Again, just the way that everything has been set up here, it should point to a Samoa Joe win. I'm having trouble seeing it. Unless maybe they're not doing the MJF match at World's End. Maybe they're going to do one more match after this with Hangman and Joe, and they're just going to bounce the belt back. You could do that. I don't know. I would just think, you know, you would want MJF on that show. I also don't know his movie schedule. You know, he's been out filming a movie, so I'm just sort of assuming that he'll be back in time to, you know, build to the last show of the year. Maybe he won't be around for a few more weeks. I don't know. They've been very quiet about MJF, and Tony really hasn't had much to say about him. It's very strange. Anyway, the second half of this was a little bit better than the first half, but you know, again, after that finish of Blood and Guts, you knew exactly who was winning this match. I mean, there was no question about it. The crowd didn't really care much about this either. I think that was part of it. I also think there was the three-hour fatigue setting in here. After the match, the Timeless Love Bombs, Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa, they appeared up on the screen. Toni said that they pitched their show to God, and he ordered the entire box set. This weekend, they won't stop until they wear Bayne and Shafir's skulls as a pearl necklace. If they win the match, they could pick any stipulation, like apartment wrestling. Or Mina suggests a Taipei death match, which Tony liked the sound of that. I'm sure both Tonys did. So Tony says that once Jon Moxley sees what they do to his Little Women, he'll piss himself with blood. We had Kazuchika Okada against Máscara Dorada. This was a double jeopardy match. You might be thinking, what the hell is that? Well, the Callis family will get to will get a future shot at the CMLL Trios titles. Why? I don't know. but they will get a future shot at the CMLL Trios titles. My God. That's if Okada wins. If Dorada wins, he will get a future shot at the Unified Championship. Sure. These two and Takeshita, I will point out, three of them had, as I recall, the match of the night back it all out. They had an incredible three-way match, lit the whole crowd up. It was just one of the best matches all year. So I was at least interested in seeing what these two would do. Obviously, the environment was not nearly the same. There weren't as many people in the building. They were very quiet for, you know, a lot of what they were seeing here in this third hour. What they had, though, was a solid match. But more than once here, these two just were not on the same page. And there were actually two different times off the top of my head that I could remember, two different times where Dorada looked like he nearly killed himself. He crashed and burned very badly on a 450 splash attempt. You know, normally when somebody goes for a 450 these days, guy moves out of the way, they just roll through. He did not roll through. He splatted on the mat and landed in such a way where I was a little concerned. Maybe he actually legitimately hurt himself, that he was kind of holding his arm after that to the side. But then he kept going and doing spots, so, you know, he seemed okay. But that gave Okada a chance to hit the air raid crash, neck breaker across the knee. Top rope elbow by Okada then led to a rainmaker middle finger pose. Dorada, though, fought him off, only to run into a beautiful Okada dropkick. Dorada flipped out of a rainmaker into a wonky-looking roll-up, only got two. Dorada did hit the 450 splash this time for a very close near fall. Both men fought up top. Dorada then tried a super hurricanrana. And Okada tried to turn it into a powerbomb on the way down, only for Dorada to land right on his head, or nearly on his head. Maybe it was more on his shoulder, but it was a very scary landing for Dorada on the way. You could even see the people in the crowd like gasping and holding their mouths like, holy shit, is he alive? Okada finally put him away with another dropkick flush and then the Rainmaker, and he got the win. This was not bad, but this was not great either. So Don Callis is at ringside. He gets on the mic as soon as the match is over, and he said that with that win, they will be cashing in their trios title match, not the AEW trios titles. No. I want to clarify here. This is the CMLL trios titles. And when are they going to get this match? I'll give you one guess. Saturday. We don't have enough matches. We need one more. We have another match now added to the card on Saturday, but it will not be on the main card. The Okada match will be on the pre-show. This is going to be on the Tailgate Brawl pre-show. And it is going to be the Unified Champion, Kazuchika Okada, teaming with Hechicero and the returning IWGP Champion, Konosuke Takeshita. And Okada, they had the camera on Okada in the ring as Callis was making these announcements. And he had a big, cheesy smile on his face until Callis mentioned Takeshita. And then his whole demeanor changed. The expression on his face went from happiness to, I don't know, he just looked incredulous. He just sadness and disbelief. Just the way he sold it with his expression, I thought was great. So look, I mean, they're going to continue the Okada and Takeshita stuff in that match. They're probably going to win. But I have no issue with them continuing the angle. I think we're all, I know the sickos will disagree. I think we're all tapped out as far as the matches on Saturday. I think we're good. I think we're good now. But it's also weird having Okada on the pre-show. So the main card is already full. I'm not advocating that you got to move it to the main card. It's the CMLL Trios titles on an AEW show. So it's like, whatever. You can have that on the pre-show. But really, I just look at that. I'm sure it'll be a really good match, but it's more just to further the Okada-Takeshita angle than anything else. They closed, finally, with the hometown girl here in Boston, Mercedes Moné, against the returning Red Velvet to crown the undisputed Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion. I just called the Mercedes match on Saturday that she had when she won title number 13. She is now the APAC Wrestling Women's Champion. That is a Malaysian promotion. And called her main event match against Nora Phoenix Diana. And so now here she is. And we have, this was not title number 14 that she was going for. This was really just to make it official. She already had the interim title. So if she wins here, it's not like, oh, she wins number 14. No, she already has the title. It just, she'll be the undisputed champion now. Title number 14 is what she's going for on Saturday at Full Gear. That would be if she beat Chris Statlander. As far as why this match is happening, Red Velvet's been hurt for many months. She hasn't wrestled since June. Again, what, did we really need an interim Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion? We did not. We did not. It would have been fine for Red Velvet. Just take the title from her, crown a new champion, let her get the first shot at it when she comes back. Tony likes doing interim titles. He's done it many times before. He'll do it many times in the future. So because of that, we ended up with this match. So the match spilled out to the floor where Monet shoved Velvet into Chris Statlander, who was sitting in on commentary. So Statlander got knocked over. Back in the ring, Velvet tried to do the Eddie Guerrero spot by tossing one of the belts to Mercedes and then lying down on the mat while referee Aubrey Edwards was tied up with Statlander. Edwards questioned Mercedes, but Velvet rolled her up for a quick two count. Late in the match, Velvet dodged a corner meteora, and she dropped Mercedes on her head with a released German. Velvet applied the octopus hold. Mercedes, though, countered with a lung blower. Both women now are fighting up in the corner. And Velvet hits a wheelbarrow victory roll off the ropes, which was a pretty good spot. Got a nice reaction. Did not get a victory for her because the impact ended up causing both women to be down. So both women got back up on the ropes. This time, though, Mercedes turned it into an avalanche. It was looking like an avalanche tombstone. Like we've seen MJF do that before off the ropes. But instead it was an avalanche lung blower, which looked great. And she didn't even really need to transition into a statement maker or anything like that. She just covered her and she pinned her because that is a finish. It looked great. Don't need to win with anything else but that. And so with that, Mercedes Moné just went from the interim television champion to the official Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion. She immediately climbed on top of the announce desk, held up both belts, the interim belt, the official belt, which is weird because it's the same championship, but the official belt has a red strap and her interim title has a black strap. So she's posing and dancing with them on top of the desk. Chris Statlander is standing down below looking up at her, and Mercedes throws the belts at Statlander and then jumps off the desk. With a meteora, takes her down to the ground. And then she applies the statement maker on Chris Statlander. And the babyface champion begins tapping out. And then Mercedes lets go of the hold and she gets back up on the desk and she's posing and she's dancing. And Statlander just, because they're going off the air now, Statlander just pops back up, picks up Red Velvet and carries her to the back like nothing happened. I'm like, what a weird way to end the show. I mean, I get they were in Boston, and so they wanted to give Mercedes her little celebration, and she had her fans there. But the way they did that, the closing minute where Statlander, you know, is in the hold and taps out and then just pops up and picks her up and carries her off, very, very strange, I thought, the way that they closed the show here. But what it means for Full Gear is what I've been saying all along, which is that Mercedes is going to lose. And there are still some people who are convinced otherwise, and you have every right to feel that way based on the way this run has gone. But I'm telling you, for the story that they seem to be telling and the story that I think they should tell, she has to lose on Saturday. And I think this was a good sign. You know, last week in Blood and Guts, Statlander put her down through a table with a Samoan drop. And I said, well, let's see what happens. There's one more show left. And sure enough, Mercedes got the last laugh here on this show. She tapped out Chris Statlander and she won the match and she's posing with all of her belts. She's losing. She's losing on Saturday because that is the story. The story is that she has all of these championships and the one blemish on her record this year, they said 30-1. You know who the one is? Toni Storm. That was for the AEW Women's World title in Texas. She lost then. She's going to lose on Saturday. And she will eventually win that championship. But when she does, she's not going to have 13 titles in her luggage that she's transporting with her to every city. She'll be beltless at that point. And then it'll be okay for her to win the championship next year. Now is not that time. So watching what happened here at the end of the show only reinforces that prediction in my mind that Chris Statlander's title is safe, at least for a little while longer. I'm fairly confident that the outcome will be very different at Full Gear this year than it was at last year's Full Gear. Didn't work out too well for Chris Statlander last year. I think she'll be fine this weekend. And that was your Dynamite and Collision combo show. Please don't do these again. I hate these combo shows. I hate these combo shows. Let's go through these predictions real quick. I got the full card here. You guys can chime in with your own thoughts and predictions. This is the current, hopefully final, Full Gear card. Pre-show starts at 7 Eastern on Saturday. Main card kicks off at 8 p.m. Eastern. We have on the pre-show Big Boom AJ of the Costco guys. He's back, and he's teaming with QT Marshall against Rocky Romero and Trent Barretta. I'm sure that will be a win for Big Boom and QT because Rocky Romero never wins shit. We have the Acclaimed. We have the Bang Bang Gang, Big Bill and Brian Keith, and the Outrunners. This is going to be a $200,000 tag team match. Why? Why not? The Acclaimed will win the cash. It should be the Outrunners, but Tony doesn't do shit with the Outrunners. They never win anything. So I don't see why they would win here. And just added, Okada, Takeshita, Hechicero challenge Sky Team, Mascara Dorada, Mystico, and Neon for the CMLL Trios Championships. I'm going to go that we have new champions. I think Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero win the belts. That's my prediction. Otherwise, if they're going to lose, then Hechicero is taking the losing fall. But I think they're going to win. Then on the main card, we have the Casino Gauntlet match. We know that Bobby Lashley is number one. Shelton Benjamin is number two. We know Ricochet is in. The Gates of Agony are in. And we know that Jetspeed is in. And I believe that's all we know. A lot of people may think that Ricochet is going to win the championship, especially after what happened tonight. Throw him a bone. We'll give him something to do. I'm going with Switchblade Jay White. There's a name you haven't heard in a while. He's been out hurt. He's had a string of bad luck when, you know, it comes to injuries. I honestly don't even know what his status is, but he's been gone long enough. And I feel like he's someone who could potentially benefit. He could take this new championship and maybe, you know, help elevate it to a certain level that is maybe right alongside the TNT title. It gives him, you know, something worthwhile to do upon his return. As I don't see him immediately being vaulted into the world title picture. And he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be vaulted into the world title picture. I hope we get to see Switchblade back. And if we do, I think he's going to win the championship. That's my prediction. Then we have the $1 million match, which will have Kenny Omega and the Jurassic Express team of Jack Perry and Luchasaurus taking on the Young Bucks and Josh Alexander. I originally had the heels. I am changing my prediction. I am going with Omega and Jurassic Express. And I do think that this leads to a reunion of the Elite. We have the women's tag team four corners match with all four teams that remain in the tag team title tournament. So Tony and Mina, Megan Bain and Marina Shafir, Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, Sky Blue and Julia Hart. The winners get to choose the stipulation for their next tournament match. I am going to go with Megan Bain and Marina Shafir for the win. because I think they lose to Tony and Mina. I still have Tony and Mina winning the titles. So at least here they get a win. They could pick the stip for their match. That's really, of the two matches that are left in this second round, that's the one, that's the bigger of the two matches. Because this directly stems from the finish of Blood and Guts last week. Right? And that was a Blood and Guts match. And that was a pretty intense finish there. That really is the match that should have the stipulation. And I don't see Tony and Mina winning now. I see them winning at the end. So I'm going with Megan and Marina. They win. They pick the stip. What the stip is, who the hell knows? I don't think we should have stipulations at all in this tournament. I don't like that. But this is what they've chosen to do. We have Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher. No disqualification for the TNT Championship. This should be a win for Mark Briscoe. He is not joining the Callis family. And we will have a new TNT champion. John Moxley will face Kyle O'Reilly. No holds barred. My head and my heart are telling me two different things. My head tells me John Moxley. My heart and what I would like to see them do is Kyle O'Reilly. I'm going to go with Kyle. I'm going to go with what I think should happen. I think Kyle O'Reilly should win this match. And then I think in Darby Allin and Pac, I think Pac should win. I think Moxley loses. I think Pac wins. And let's progress this Death Riders thing to that next chapter of the story. Clearly, the story is not going to be over for some time. Well, let's at least progress to whatever this next chapter is going to be. And I think that's the way you do it. Kyle wins. Pac wins. We have Brodito against FTR for the tag team titles. I think we have new champions in FTR. Chris Statlander and Mercedes Moné for the Women's World Championship. This should absolutely be, and I believe will be, a win for Chris Statlander. And then in the main event, Hangman Adam Page against Samoa Joe, Steel Cage, for the AEW World Championship. You know, now that you mentioned that before in the chat, it would be interesting if MJF makes his presence felt during the match and is no disqualification, because in a cage match, there are no DQs, and it leads to Samoa Joe winning the championship. And Joe gets, as he did last time, it wasn't a very long run. Oh, he got a few months though. I mean, Joe won the title at World's End. He lost it to Swerve at Dynasty. So he had it from the very, really the beginning of the year to early April, or maybe it was late April. So he had a little decent run out of it. If he was to win the championship, I don't see him having the title nearly as long this time, but I'm just not sure that they're going to do that. I'm going to stick with my original pick. I had Hangman winning. Everything they've done, honestly, even tonight, points to a different outcome, but I'm going to stick to my guns and say that Hangman retains. We have MJF make a surprise return post-match. Again, he can't cash in his title contract because the rules have changed. So now you've got to give at least a week's notice. And I think all roads lead to Hangman and MJF at World's End, if I had to make a prediction about what the main event will be on that show. But can I see Samoa Joe still being involved in this and maybe, you know, turning it into a three-way? Sure. But the real issue here is Hangman and MJF. That's what they have to circle back to. You know, that's the match to do. So I got Hangman retaining here. So that is the full gear card, barring any additional matches that are added on social media in the next few days, which, by the way, there very well could be. I don't think so, though. I mean, the pre-show, I'm pretty sure, is only an hour. You know, sometimes it's 2 hours or 90 minutes. It's a 7 o'clock start time, so you only have an hour. They already have three matches, so I'm pretty sure we've got the card locked down at this point. Be aware that I will not be here on Friday for the SmackDown review. I will be in Chicago. We'll be in Chicago because House of Glory, we have a sold-out show at Logan Square Auditorium, and as you see here on the poster, that's just some of the action that we've got. It's a pretty good card, I got to tell you. First time ever, Amazing Red and Tyler Breeze. Very happy to be bringing Tyler Breeze in. Got to get the full entrance. Charles Mason defends the HOG World Championship against Cedric Alexander. We got the Rascals going to be in action against Main Event. Zilla Fatu is back. Who will he be wrestling? We'll see. Mustafa Ali against Marcus Mathers. Indy Hartwell defends her title against Shotzi. And more. So there's no tickets left, but you can watch on Triller TV Plus. Guess who's going to be on the call? This guy right here. I'll be calling the action. So if you're not watching SmackDown, and many of you have already checked out of SmackDown, then go ahead and check out our return to the Windy City. Should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Samoa Joe crashing out is really funny, says dried chicken and turkey. Joe was the best part of that main event. But Joe was great. He wasn't even in the match. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. One thing I hate about the fall season is how it gets darker earlier. Makes me feel like I somehow have fewer hours in the day to get stuff done. And honestly, I just find it to be depressing when I look out the window at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it's pitch black outside. But it really can have a negative effect on your mental state. That's why all November long, BetterHelp is encouraging you to reach out, whether it be to reconnect with an old friend that you haven't spoken to in forever, or to check in on a family member, to remind the people in your life that you're there and they're not alone. And just like it takes courage to send that message or make that phone call, seeking out help in the form of therapy can feel intimidating also, but it's worth it. You'll be asking yourself, man, how come I didn't do this sooner? Finding the right therapist can be life-changing, and BetterHelp makes that process simple. They do the initial matching work for you so that you can focus on your therapy goals. All you do is fill out a short questionnaire, which helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate mean they usually get it right the first time. But if for any reason you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. And all BetterHelp therapists are fully licensed in the U.S., adhering to a strict code of conduct in all the work they do. As the world's largest online therapy platform with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp has an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on more than 1.7 million client reviews. The numbers speak for themselves. This month, don't wait to reach out. Whether you're checking in on a friend or reaching out to a therapist yourself, BetterHelp makes it easier to take that first step. Solid Monster listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Solid Monster. That's BetterHelp.com/Solid Monster. The Moldy Cheeseburger. Who has the better retirement tour currently, Hiroshi Tanahashi or John Cena? Well, I mean, it's just two totally different tours. I mean, Cena's obviously got more eyeballs on what he's doing, and he's had bigger matches. You know, he had a couple of matches with Cody. He had a rematch with Punk and Orton along the way, AJ. So his retirement tour has been more prolific. I can name off better matches that I have personally have watched from Cena's retirement tour. A lot of the matches that Tanahashi has had, I mean, there's been like a lot of tags. He's been more active than Cena. So again, it's really just two totally different tours. Like, Cena has a limited number of dates. Tanahashi's been, you know, he's been working all year and working with younger guys, working with older guys. So I haven't really seen too much of Tanahashi's tour. It's unfair for me to judge. Honestly, doesn't change the fact that so much of what they did with Cena early on was a fucking botch. Also, I noticed WWE doesn't counter-program AEW shows anymore. Is there a reason why? What are you talking about? They just did in September. I mean, they're not going to do it every month. But they're absolutely still doing it, and they will continue doing it into next year. We just had WrestlePalooza. That's why All Out got moved in September. It wasn't that long ago, dude. It was... Well, now it's officially November 20th. It was literally 2 months ago. Believe me, they're still counter-programming AEW. MacTub. Why isn't Rock a guaranteed Rushmore guy? Biggest ratings, attendance, pay-per-view draw. Goat Mike. Austin. Because he just wasn't... He wasn't as big. He might be bigger now, but like at the peak, Austin just hit different. And without Austin getting hot when he did in the way that he did, they don't have the successes that they had. It really hinged on him and the whole Austin McMahon thing getting over. So Austin is in that rarefied air. So is Hogan. People would have said the same thing, I think, about Savage, too. Oh, how come Hogan gets all the praise? What about Savage? Savage is great. Rock is great. But Hogan was the guy. Austin was the guy. They transcended at just the right time. And everything else flowed from that. Rock's not on my Mount Rushmore. He could be on yours. He's not on mine. He's not on a lot of people's. Cena versus Bryan. Y2J Triple H. Better overall for you. Better overall. Oh, Cena Y2J? Yeah, wasn't really a fan of that. For me personally, Bryan. Just a much better match. Yeah, Cena against Triple H never did anything for me. I was never a fan of their matches, their feud. Eh, boring. If I had to rank them, I'd go Bryan, then Y2J, then Triple H. Dude Here 73 says, this was more a go-to-sleep show than a go-home show. I agree. I was struggling to keep up with things. Midway through, I was pretty well done with this show. It says, and I'm trying to understand what the point of Blood and Guts was. They're running back a lot of the same feuds Saturday with more stipulations. Yeah, it's just, it's very dumb. It's very stupid. Hey guys, Maven here with a $5 super chat. Eddie botches a spinning back fist at All Out on September 20th. Mina botches a spinning back fist today, November 19th. Maybe we get a third botched back fist at Dynamite on January 21st. Well, I'm going to leave that up to you. Mark that date down, and when we get to that show, let's see what happens. Maybe we'll get another one. Fabian Garcia, Kyle versus Mox should be a 30-minute ultimate submission. Oh, no. No, it should not. No, I don't want to see that. There's no reason for Moxley and Kyle to go 30 minutes. This is another problem with these AEW shows. It's, you know, they give you a lot of matches, but there are matches in the middle of this card that go way longer than they need to. The Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher match at WrestleDream, 25 fucking minutes for that match. Why? Just to have a second one. I don't want to see Moxley in a 30-minute anything. I mean, Moxley can be great, you know, with the right opponent and everything, but Moxley and Kyle in a 30-minute match on this show with 10 or 11 other matches? Absolutely not. Arabian Knight, do they not know how to sell big moves and finishers in AEW? Shaking my head. Nothing matters. I guess they all watched PWG growing up. They did. Actually, many of them competed in PWG. I believe Daniel Garcia was the last PWG champion. Still is. So Statlander getting up 10 seconds later was dumb. Yeah, the Statlander stuff at the end was very weird, the way that all transpired. Boss Toys, are we used to Pac looking that way yet? Because I'm not. Also, nice to see Samoa Joe continue to intimidate Tony Schiavone just by existing. Yeah, Pac, I'm still getting over this new look. It's the hair. Alex says, Brother Solo, how in the world did Diesel and Shawn not main event over LT and Bam Bam? What was Vince thinking behind that decision? Also, what did you think of the Diesel and Shawn Michaels match? I'm not really a big fan of that match. It's not a bad match, but I don't like it nearly as much as their Good Friends, Better Enemies match. And the reason why LT main evented the show is because they've always been, I mean, they've always been star fuckers in this company, you know, and if they got a celebrity to come in to do a match back then, they were paying him, I think they paid him about $500,000 for that match. They were going to get their money's worth. They were putting him in that main event. They had all the other NFL guys out there, all the celebrities they brought in. Paid a lot of money to get him to do that match. So it was always going to be the main event. And Big Hoss. Rank these six wrestlers, futures and potential. Bron Breakker, Dom, Jacob, Fatu, Obafemi, Trick Williams, and Javon Evans. Also, I need Athena in WWE and on SmackDown. She would be a tremendous addition to SmackDown, but she's not going nowhere. I have said, I just said this on TNT last night. I said it on my platform. This company needs to build around five guys. Just if we're looking at the guys right now. And I think they will. Five guys as their future. And in no particular order, it's Dom, Bron Breakker, Jacob Fatu, Obafemi, and Javon Evans. Just like in those five guys alone, they could help carry this company for years to come. You never know how things are going to go, injuries and, you know, things like that. Shit happens. Things don't pan out. But as of right now, like, I look at, if I had to, like, look at what's that nucleus of guys, those are the five guys right there. I don't like ranking them because no one knows, like, which one of them is going to hit it big. It could be Dom, for all we know. You know, he's already got 5 years of being established on TV. Just looking at these guys right now, they all have great potential to be top guys in the company. I think Oba may have the greatest. I might have to put Oba first, honestly. You know, and then maybe Fought 2 and then Breakker and then Dom and then Trick. I don't know. I hate ranking them because we just don't know where they're going to end up. But they're in good hands as long as they know what they're doing with them. You know, and they utilize them and book them properly. The talent is there. You can't say, oh my God, where are we going to find the future? The future is right there. You know, the future is now. The future is staring you right in the face. Dr. Scorpio, AEW needs Michael Myers in Blood and Guts at this rate. I mean, they set people on fire. They attempted murder. And yes, I watched the movies. I enjoyed them. Well, I'll tell you what, man, if you would have just come into Dynamite tonight and I had no idea that last week was Blood and Guts, I never would have known. If Pac didn't mention Darby being set on fire, I never would have known. You're going to do that level of brutality and violence. You got to wear those wounds of war. I think the closest thing was Sky Blue in her backstage promo. If you really squinted and you looked hard, you could kind of see a little scar along the hairline. But that was it, pretty much. Oh, what a wasted opportunity to really sell the brutality of Blood and Guts. But this feels like nothing matters. Anyway, Full Gear is on Saturday. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure, on the podcast. I have a lot to say on the podcast this weekend. Hey, Duff's Vids with a $4.99. Hey, Solo, what are your top three or five Survivor Series pay-per-views? Want to watch one or so before Survivor Series 2025? Well, then you're in luck because on the WWE Vault channel, they just uploaded one the other day, Survivor Series 89. That was literally, 2-3 days ago? I think they streamed that one. Go check that one out. It's on their channel right now. Survivor Series 89 is probably one of them for me. I really enjoyed 90, which had that Ultimate Survivors match at the end, which they never did again. 2002 was a pretty good one. you know, for me personally, I may go 89, 90. I like 95. 96. 96 had Sean and Sid in the main event, which was Sid's best match. The first Bret Hart-Steve Austin match, which is a classic. They had Rock's debut on that show, you know, as far as historical significance goes. But I think just for Sean and Sid and Bret and Austin alone, 96 has to be up there. Yeah, 95 is underrated. I like 95. But yeah, if you're looking for one to go check out, the easiest one that you're going to be able to grab is on their Vault channel. Go check out 89. Always loved the team names back then. The Hulkamaniacs and the Million Dollar Team. The Vipers and the Visionaries. With Vince doing all the intros. Really made it feel special, you know? Really got you pumped up at the beginning of the show. I think one of the things that I really can't stand about the weekly shows now on TV is how just they all blend together. There's nothing, like when they come on the air, there's nothing to really get you excited. Like Raw comes on the air, there's no proper intro anymore. They did away with the intro. There's no more intro for Monday Night Raw. There's no intro video. They don't come into the arena, the pyro's going off and everything to really get your blood pumping. You know, they have fucking Travis Scott singing the Raw theme, so they come on the air. And here's who's coming in with their coffee at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, walking, pretending to have a conversation with the person next to them. Like, how fucking lazy are they with these shows, man? What happened? What happened to the weekly shows, man? When the show comes on the air, they get you excited. It's missing. One of the many things that is missing from these weekly shows. All right, I'll see you guys in Chicago and back here on Monday. Until then, take care.